In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies. To do that, we turn to the area's premier film expert. You read his work in The Main Edge. He is a contributor to Rotten Tomatoes. He's like 99.9% fresh.
I'm super fresh.
Yeah. He's Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you. We were chatting about Thanksgiving. You had a big family gathering.
Had a lovely holiday with my down at my my in-laws' house down in Cherryfield. My wife and I brought our dog, and you know, her brother and sister brought their respective families, and it was just a big old celebration with food, just food up the wazoo. It was fantastic.
So, how many people at your gathering?
At the actual dinner, because it was let's see, like five kids. You know, the three kids plus their significant others, Gordon and Cynthia, and then my mother and my sister came as well. So yeah, like 14 or 15, oof, something like that.
And how about at Shea Haskell? How many were you cooking for?
We had a final tally of 9.
Wow, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, we were down there. We actually went down actually early on Wednesday, so I was unable to join you on Wednesday.
We missed you, but we recovered.
It was it was interesting because it was just like, yeah, I was basically just removed from my world for like 3 or 4 days, and it was kind of nice. It was a nice way to sort of recharge the batteries and, you know, spent the entire time eating and then drinking and then eating some more and then drinking some more.
Thanksgiving just reaffirmed itself as probably my favorite holiday.
Just, there's something so wonderfully simple about it. It's just indulge yourself.
Yes. Food, family, friends, football.
Yep.
Boom. You get much better than that.
It's true.
All right. You also managed to see a couple of movies this weekend.
I did. Which one would you like to start with?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's start with, because I think we may talk more about The Irishman, since I had a chance to see that as well. Let's talk about Knives Out, starring friend of Downtown, Gary Tanguay.
That's right. I got to say, I wasn't sure, like, the... Like, I like the film is written and directed by Rian Johnson, who he's done movies. He did the movie Brick, Looper, The Last Jedi was him. But this is his first movie after sort of venturing into the mega budgeted world of Star Wars. And so I wasn't sure what to get. Like, you could kind of catch a little bit of an irreverent tone from the trailers and whatnot. Mm. And, obviously the cast is dynamite. So you're just, so it's like, oh, okay. So this is the high floor on this movie. Like, it's the odds of this movie being bad are very slim. It was fantastic. Like, I had an absolutely wonderful time. It was basically this wonderful combination of both celebrating and subverting the sort of classic, like, Agatha Christie-esque whodunit kind of thing. It very much embraced the basic tropes of that genre, while also sort of updating things for the 21st century. I'm not going to go too much into detail as far as the plot, because I don't want to spoil anything for anyone. The basic gist is a very wealthy mystery novelist. He's the most famous mystery novelist in the world. His name's Harlan Thrombey, and he's played by Christopher Plummer. His family has gathered at his palatial estate to celebrate his 85th birthday. And then he turns up dead by his own hand. Or does he? And so what winds up happening is there's a police investigation that is going, initially appears to be cursory, but then suddenly appears the world famous private detective Benoit Blanc, played by Daniel Craig, with a delightful Southern accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Very very cornpone, sort of a cornpone Poirot kind of vibe coming from him, which is fantastic. And so he basically comes in. He's been hired by someone he doesn't know who to investigate the particulars of Harlan Thrombey's demise. And so he basically brings the entire his the entire extended Thrombey family together. So you've got his daughter Linda, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, and her a-hole husband Richard, played by Don Johnson, and their older son is just beautifully encapsulating the entitled smug trust fund kid. Their son Ransom, played by Chris Evans, who's phenomenal in this movie. Then you've got his son Walt, played by Michael Shannon.
Holy cow!
I know, right? Who basically runs the publishing arm, basically runs the publisher that produces the Thrombey mysteries. His wife and his son, played by Jaden Martell, who was so good in the It movies as young Bill Denbrough, playing a sort of an alt-right troll type kid, which was hilarious. And then there's Toni Collette plays the widow of one of the other of the other deceased son, and her teenage daughter, all while also including the Harlan's longtime nurse, played by Ana de Asta, who's also wonderful in this movie. And it's basically Benoit Blanc has some questions, and it turns out that everybody is keeping secrets and has motivations that are less than pure, and everyone has certain truths that they're keeping from the light for reasons of their own advancement, and everybody has something that they want, and no one's quite sure how to get it, and it's very whodunit in a delightful way. And it's so funny because there's so much I want to say, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone, because it's that kind of movie. Like, there's just so many twists and turns. But what I can say is that Rian Johnson both A, clearly adores this kind of movie, and B, is has probably been thinking about making this movie for a decade or more, because it's one of those movies that's so intricately plotted and meticulously detailed, and it looks great, and everything fits in its right place. And then, you know, you've got that incredible cast where everybody's throwing 100, man. Like, they're all just dealing, and it's wildly funny, and like, there are genuine surprises. There are, like, it's got all the red herrings that you want, where it's like, oh, I think I know what's going to happen, and then you don't know anything about it. And at the center of it all is Daniel Craig, who, again, I love a good movie detective, and he's as good as I've seen in a movie in ages. Like, he's I saw this somewhere. I don't even remember who wrote this, but it was he's a better Poirot than Poirot.
Wow.
You know, and it's just like, and he's just that perfect blend of wildly speculative and really on point. And there are just all these things that happen over the course of it that just give everyone room to breathe. Like, everybody gets some run, and it's just phenomenal. Like, just across the board, excellent. It was such a good time. Thankfully, at the box office, it performed well enough to show that, you know what? Original ideas can make money at the box office.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it was, if you love movies, it was a great weekend, I think, for the overall health of the movie industry, because it was a big, big weekend. And I love the fact that four of the top five movies were original. They weren't, nothing wrong with comic book movies, but they were original movies with adult stories.
Yeah, it was, and it's great. And it's, we're at that time of year, and there are always going to be Frozens, you know, like,
and that's great.
Yeah. And it's, and I'll, like, real talk, like, I went to see Frozen again this weekend, because some of my in-laws and the little ones wanted to see it. So I'm like, yeah, all right. Like, I'll go watch this movie again. It was awesome. But seeing stuff like Knives Out be successful, it's not even the question that the movie got made, but that the movie was successful, like, that, I hope, sends the right message to the folks in Hollywood that, you know, it's not necessarily just about IP. Like, if you have a good idea and good people working to make that idea a reality, there's money to be made.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't at the box office because it's on Netflix, but it seemed like half the free world was tying up a good part of their weekend watching The Irishman.
Yeah, man. 3.5 hours.
I thought it went by pretty quickly.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Nope. I
didn't have a problem with it.
And I didn't know what to expect. I really... I really wasn't sure, but I was completely captivated.
You know, I made a conscious effort to remove myself as far from the discourse surrounding the movie, because, you know, it got the limited theatrical release, you know, earlier in the month. You know, it showed on a number of screens. It got a fairly wide release ultimately. I mean, it showed up at our local Cineplex for a week or so. But I have to say, there was something really great about watching it, about being able to watch it at home, about being able to watch it on your own time. Because, you know, and I'm not going to sit here, like, there are people out there complaining. It's like, oh, I'm not, what am I going to, how am I going to invest 3.5 hours? It's like, I mean, it's, you know, it's half an hour longer than Avengers Endgame, you know? It's like, right. You know, come on, guys. Like, if you're not capable of dealing with, you know, something that doesn't, you know, shake its keys at you every 30 seconds, I don't know what to tell you.
Exactly. You know, what we were saying earlier.
And, I this is coming from someone who loves those movies. But, I mean, this is a completely different animal. And I don't know how you feel about it, Rich, but because this is another one where it's like, I don't want to talk too much about the plot. Just because right. I feel like going in fairly clean was very beneficial to my enjoyment of the movie. You know, for the basic gist, it's basically the story of a guy by the name of Frank Sheeran, played by Robert De Niro, the titular Irishman. The film's subtitle, I Heard You Paint Houses, which is a joke that you will get when you watch the movie, and you will find it probably as amusing as I did. It's basically about this guy who, living in Philadelphia, kind of a small-time crook, union guy, who winds up just sort of being swept up into the dual worlds of organized crime and labor organization.
And becomes the Zelig of the time.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like he's present for all of these iconic moments of American history, but like seen through the various lenses, you know, the very specific perspectives lent by, a proud union guy and a mobbed up guy. And so to just follow this guy who's got a foot in both of those worlds, and granted, there's a lot of overlap between them, mm-hmm. but they're distinct, and to exist in both of those places, to serve two masters, to be loyal to two causes, you know, there's always going to be some conflict there, and ultimately you have to make a choice, and I think that's a lot of what this movie is about. It's about the nature of masculinity. It's about the gray areas of morality. It's about mortality. Like, it's about all these big themes, the sorts of themes that Scorsese's always explored in his work. But he was, the joy of watching this movie was he was clearly given carte blanche by Netflix.
Yeah,
they were just like, do what you want. You're Martin Scorsese, and so he did. And so you have this just sprawling It's an American epic. Like, that's what it is. It's a sort of secret history of the last half of the 20th century that is just brilliantly, brilliantly shot. Like, there are so many moments in this movie where you're just like, I would hang the still of the scene like on a wall.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And I mentioned the great job of editing over the weekend. Somebody said, "Well, how much editing?" It was 3.5 hours. Oh, shut up.
Yeah,
the editing was brilliant.
Yeah, well, and it's like, and you're dealing with this cast of thousands, like just this gigantic, and one of the things that that definitely needs to be talked about is the aging process. That's the one thing that people, I think, maybe who don't know anything else about this movie, that's something that they've heard. I don't know where you come down on it. For me, honestly, it wasn't great, but it didn't detract from my enjoyment of the movie.
I was a little distracted by it early on, and then I just sort of forgot about it.
Well, it was just once we got past the point where we were expected to believe that Robert De Niro was like 30 years old.
Yeah,
it was okay. Like, it was okay, but, like, you know, there are a couple of scenes, like, it's not even necessarily the look of the thing, but, like, the physicality sometimes was off.
Well, there's a scene, and I don't think it gives away much, where he's throwing guns in the river, and, you know, he's 70-something. He moves
like
a guy in his 60s. Yeah. We'll give him that.
But, yeah, he's not, you
so
know.
So you can digitally alter the face, but you can't alter the way people carry themselves.
Yeah, and, again, and those, like... And there are just a couple of moments like that. And again, when you're making...
I was more distracted by his blue eyes, I think.
Yeah, the eyes. Well, but it's like, oh, well, he's Irish. So I guess his eyes have to be... But, again, like these are minor like quibbles. And, you know, I'm not ready to put this movie up, with the sort of the top tier Scorsese stuff, the Taxi Drivers or the Raging Bulls or the Goodfellas of the world. Like it's not quite up to that, but... I'll be honest with you, Rich. I didn't necessarily think Scorsese had another one like this in it.
No, and the performances were amazing. It's the best thing Pesci's done maybe forever.
But that's the thing, and that was something that I sort of caught my attention. I was like, geez, Joe Pesci, what's he been up to? You know, this is the only third. This is only the third on-screen film performance he's had in the 21st century.
Yeah,
he basically shut it down after like Lethal Weapon 4. Like back in the late 90s.
And it was great to see him. It was great to see De Niro care again.
You know, and it's like, you know.
Not going through the motions.
And, you know, and bless his heart, like, you know, we all know that Bobby's been, you know, been taking a lot of paycheck parts over the years. Like, and that's fine. You know, he's earned it.
Yep.
But it was nice to see him in a place where, like, there was clearly a two-way respect between filmmaker and performer. I think it's probably hard for a lot of people to establish with someone like De Niro, just because he has such a long history. But Scorsese's been there with him since the beginning, and so that dynamic really played through. Like you said, Pesci, Pesci's just phenomenal in this movie, and in a very different way than he's been excellent in other films. And I don't know exactly how to articulate that in a
subtle.
Specific. Yeah, there's a quietness to him that's almost more menacing than the sort of psychotic rage kind of that he has brought to the table in the past, which was, it was just unexpected and just such a wonderfully understated performance that sat very nicely alongside De Niro. Like the scenes where it's just the two of them, like in a restaurant, like or whatever, just sitting next to each other, like having a conversation. It's like, how is this so compelling? Like, it's just like this wonderful confluence of circumstances that come together to make something like this work. And Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa, I wasn't sure what I was going to get. And I'm like, am I going to get like full on like parody Pacino? And, you know, I kind of did, but it worked.
He was chomping the scenery, but yeah, I mean, it's Jimmy Hoffa.
That's the thing.
He was larger than life anyway.
It's such a good fit between actor and role, and it's something that I would never have guessed. I wouldn't have even considered it in a million years, but it just clicked in such a great way. And man, you know, Pacino, like, say what you will, like, the dude can just he just dominates the screen, man. He's just so magnetic, and to see him like play this real life person and to imbue him with this real, like, I mean, just intense sort of chaotic energy, it just made for such a wildly compelling film. And all that leaves aside the stacked supporting cast full of people like Harvey Keitel and Bobby Cannavale. Well,
Ray Romano, who's had, what a year he's had with, I think, an Oscar-worthy performance in Paddleton with Mark Duplass, and then so good in this.
Yeah, Romano is great. And then you got some younger folks, Jesse Plemons is great as Hoffa's son. Anna Paquin is wonderful as one of Sheeran's like grown daughters. Like they have some wonderful moments. But yeah, it's just so like the cast is stacked. Like even with like three like icons, like under a lot of directors, like three guys of that stature, particularly De Niro and Pacino, they're going to suck all the oxygen out of the room.
But it was still an ensemble.
It really was.
It was also, I was surprised how funny the movie was.
There, I mean, just some phenomenal, phenomenal lines, just like some really hilarious moments and it all felt organic. Like it wasn't there was no shtick. It wasn't bits.
No,
it was just like there was, it all was born from this very genuine place. No one really understands this world as well as Scorsese, as far as American filmmakers go. But here's the thing. You know, we can talk about, you know, the length and the CGI stuff and what have you. But what we have is one of the greatest American filmmakers making a movie with two of the greatest film actors to ever be on screen. Like that's and when you put it like that, it's like, yeah, take 3.5 hours, take six, right. take all the time you want, because like, you know, these guys are gonna make something compelling to watch. Just it was a phenomenal experience. I'm so glad that it exists, and we'll see how well it's rewarded come awards season. I think it's going to do pretty well.
Oh, I think so, too. Hey, our friend Upton Bell reached out on Twitter and wanted to know, it's not out yet, but what are you hearing about 1917?
Oh, man. So the big thing about this movie that I'm fascinated by, directed by Sam Mendes, he did, I think, Skyfall. It was a Bond movie. I think it was Skyfall. But he's a really talented director. The thing about 1917 is it's a one-shot movie. So basically, it's the conceit is the entire movie is a single continuous take, and again, you do that with editing tricks and what and inside the camera editing and all that. But yeah, that's the conceit is that it's a single take, and I heard that and I'm like doing that with a war movie, like I'm so jazzed at the idea of seeing what's going to happen, and like I've seen some stills and some footage and stuff, and it just like. I love a war movie, I saw Midway a few weeks ago, and that one didn't quite scratch the itch as much as I wanted it to. The reality is World War I doesn't necessarily receive the same attention in terms of the war cinema as some of the other films, conflicts do. And so it'll be really interesting to see how that comes together. I have a hunch that neither Mr. Bell nor myself will be disappointed by 1917.
Excellent. Thank you, Al. We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes, you will.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, talking movies here on Downtown, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor.